2016 presidential campaign has focused on a number of issues like national security, economic inequality, and immigration. But one issue that hasn't grabbed as many headlines is trade. But this issue is picking up steam, especially with a recent video circulating online that shows Indiana workers learning the company that they work for is moving their jobs to Mexico.
It became clear that the best way to stay competitive and protect the business for long term is to move production from our facility in Indianapolis to Monterrey, Mexico.
Donald Trump has been promoting this video in his campaign, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorial board recently wrote a piece pointing out that opposing trade deals is a major part of the appeal for candidates like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Both candidates have loudly opposed trade agreements for hurting American jobs. But what is a good trade policy, and how much does this issue affect voters who they decide to support? Joining us now is Steve Deller, professor of agricultural and applied economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Steve, welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be back. Thank you.
So is there common ground when it comes to Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders when it comes to trade agreements?
Well, there is. It's economists have been arguing for years that opening up trade agreements, opening up markets is actually good for the economy in the long term. But it comes with some short-term painful adjustments. And I think that the current political environment right now is that you have very much of a populist type argument that is essentially telling people what they want to hear, regardless of what the actual facts are.
So you mentioned some short-term painful adjustments. What are they, and are we seeing those right now?
We've been seeing them for a long time now. Almost 30 years we've been seeing these kind of adjustments. But you have to realize that if a company wants to pick up and move production to Mexico or Taiwan or Vietnam, they could do that with or without trade agreements. Essentially what the trade agreements are doing is essentially trying to establish the rules of the game, what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, and to essentially try to allow competitive markets to work a little bit more efficiently.
Some economists have said that free trade was intended to be the rising tide that lifts all boats, good for companies, good for the United States, good for workers, but that when everything comes out in the wash, it's possible to grow free trade and the amount that's being exported, but not helping workers so much when it comes to the bottom line, their salaries.
Well, it depends on who you're asking. If you look at Mexico, for example, after NAFTA went into place, there's been a noticeable jump in economic growth in Mexico. U.S., there's a little bit of growth attached to NAFTA, but the real benefits in the short term have been a lot of our trading partners. And this has essentially, so it's rising boats, but we're not quite yet in that lake yet.
So how long does it take for something like that to play out in terms of the benefits seen in all tiers?
Well, I mean, you're seeing it in some sectors. I mean, there are some sectors in Wisconsin, for example, that are actually able to benefit from these opening up of the markets. Dairy, for example, we're seeing an increase in exports from dairy into international markets, and it's partially because some of these trade barriers are coming down. In Wisconsin, we also, some of the biggest exporting sectors are medical equipment. And again, a lot of that is because of declining trade barriers. You have to realize, though, that the U.S. economy still, only about 13% of the U.S. economy is related to international trade. This compares to 30% for Canada, or 40% to 50% for Germany, or 30% for the U.K. So the U.S. economy is still very much driven by domestic production.
Now, Wisconsin has lost about 30,000 manufacturing jobs over the past decade. Of course, the Great Recession is part of this picture, but can we put down any of that loss to the global trade climate?
Some of it has been, but again, a company that is looking at reducing its costs, they are going to move whether these trade agreements are here or not. That's irrelevant. A company that is looking at significantly reducing labor cost, or perhaps making new investments in new factories. They're finding that the cost benefits are such that, you know, moving into these other countries is more profitable for them.
We opened with that clip, a real clip, a documentary clip of workers in Indianapolis being told that their plant is going to be shuttering, moving operations to Monterrey, Mexico. You heard the response from the workers there. What would you say to those workers as an economist to help them, as you see it? I realize there's no single answer here, but what do you want them to know about why this is happening?
Well, as a cold-hearted economist, I would say the markets are difficult. You know, the markets don't take, doesn't take prisoners. You know, the thing is that the manufacturing base in the U.S. is shifting. We're shifting away from low-skilled, commodity-based type markets. We simply cannot compete in those markets, and we haven't been able to for 30, 40 years. But where we can compete is in customized high-end products. That's where we compete. And we do very well, thank you very much. And you're actually seeing some of these high-end manufacturers that are actually went overseas, and now they're coming back. They're coming back because the quality of the workforce is better here. And so there are winners and losers. But pointing to free trade agreements and essentially the rules of how trade takes place is not driving a lot of these decisions by companies.
We're talking right now with economist Steve Deller, talking about the role trade will play in this year's presidential election, looking at Wisconsin and beyond, and in general, taking in the factors affecting trade and what we're hearing from presidential candidates. And we want to hear from you. Is a candidate's trade plan a major reason that you would vote for someone? Do you maybe like Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders' ideas for getting rid of trade agreements? Have you been affected in your work life by trade agreements in the past? Call 800-642-1234. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation now about how presidential candidates like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are voicing their opposition to trade agreements and getting some traction with that position, too. You can join the conversation. Is a candidate's trade plan a major reason you might vote for someone in this election? Do you like Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders' ideas better? They both want to get rid of trade agreements. Are there nuances there that you see? And do you think the trade agreements in place now have helped or hurt American workers? Call 800-642-1234. We continue our conversation with UW-Madison economist Steve Deller. And let's take a first call now. We've got John on the line in Milwaukee. John, hi.
Hi. How are you today?
Good, thanks.
Good. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to make the comment that I don't know if it's completely connected, but I know my dad works for Johnson Controls. I think he's been there for about 14 years, and they just got let know that their department's going over to Bratislava. So I know that's not in the same sense as a lot of people think, you know, Mexico, Vietnam, places like that, but I know there is that a lot of jobs moving over to Eastern Europe like that. So whether it's trade or whether it's tax benefits, the same way that Johnson Controls hooked up with Tyco and now they're moving to Ireland, I think it's all interwoven, so maybe there might not be a clear cut. Yes, it's trade, yes, it's taxes, but I think it is kind of a partnered issue. And I'll take my response off the phone. Thank you.
John, appreciate that call. Thanks for sharing that story about your father. Father worked at Johnson Controls, now being found the plant's moving to operations to Bratislava. Are there forces here, Steve, that are working in concert that are affecting some of these changes we're seeing?
It's the tax issue is a fairly important one. I do a fair amount of work looking at how firms relocate within the U.S. And within the U.S., taxes really don't matter anything. But when you start taking an international view, then taxes actually do start to play a role. You see a number of companies that are moving to Ireland because of the way the Ireland taxes corporations and businesses there that they don't. And at that kind of a degree, it can make a big difference. With Johnson Control, I don't know the details of why they're doing that, but one of the things that is happening that John brought up is that a lot of these companies are multinational corporations, and you have a corporate headquarters that may be sitting in Switzerland. And when they're making a decision to pick up a plant from the U.S. and move it to Eastern Europe or something like that, it's the same as a national corporation in the U.S. decided to move a plant from Wisconsin to Oklahoma. It's just simply they're moving pieces around on a chessboard, but when you have multinational corporations, the chessboard is the entire world. So they're making business decisions and trade agreements, per se, if anything, really have a very minor role in that.
So what are the prevailing forces when you look at situations like that?
A lot of it is you have to realize that a lot of other countries are much more open in terms of their, not so much in terms of their trade agreements, but in terms of the amount of money that are flowing in and out of other countries. So when we start talking about putting up trade barriers, these other countries are basically saying, look, we live in a very large open economy, and that's the new reality of things. And that's essentially the new market economy, and we need to be able to compete in that kind of market economy.
Well, thanks a lot for that call, and we'll go next to Dave. Dave is joining us from Lake Villa, Illinois. Dave, hello.
Hello. Yes, about, 6-7 years ago, I was on a vacation with my wife in Huatuco, Mexico, and I was speaking with a local gentleman, and he informed me that their biggest import or export from Huatuco was one out of five of their sons is coming to the United States to work, and he said the problem being was when they passed the NAFTA agreement, the local farmer couldn't compete with the price of the cheap corn coming from the United States. So I think these agreements affect everybody.
Dave, appreciate your thoughts there and your story. Do these trade agreements end up hurting the little guy?
They can. I mean, there is trade economists have always talked about trade is driven by what economists call comparative advantage. We have a better technology or better resources that we can make something more cost-effectively than, say, our competitors. That's our comparative advantage. They're also talking about now what economies of scale or economies of size is that being bigger does drive down cost. So when you're looking at a corn farmer in the U.S. that's got 3,000 acres, their cost advantage is so much higher than a small farmer that's only got 40 acres. They just simply can't compete. So the idea then is that they need to find markets that they can compete in, and they need to be able to adjust.
And what would those markets look like?
One of the things that's shifting into now is moving away from commodities to products. And these are things that you can actually attach a little bit more of a price to. For example, I'd be willing to pay a little bit more for a particular type of fruit. Because I know that it's unique, it's different, it's not mass-produced. So it's moving into that kind of a market.
We're talking with UW-Madison economist Steve Deller right now, talking about trade agreements and how they may factor into thinking about the presidential election, too. And we're going to go next to Barbara in Waupaca. Barbara, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, because my concern is the trade courts that would be part of these agreements and how these trade courts would affect big corporations' ability to evade national laws, especially like concerning environmental regulations and things like that. Can you explain the trade courts?
Barbara, appreciate the call. Steve, trade courts.
Very complicated issue. But what happens with a lot of these trade agreements is that it's not just simply removing trade barriers. It's also implementing certain types of worker protections. It's imposing certain types of environmental regulations. So essentially what we're saying is that, okay, country X, we will open up a trade agreement with you. We will lower barriers. We want to promote this. But you need to clean up some things. You need to clean up some of your labor laws. You need to clean up some of your environmental laws. And will they come up to the U.S. standard? Probably not, but at least they're moving in the right direction. So the trade agreements are actually used as a mechanism to get some of these developing countries to actually kind of, you know, move the needle a little bit on things like environmental. Now, are the environmental regulations in these developing countries going to be as strong as the U.S.? No. Will companies take advantage of that? Probably. But it's moving the needle in the right direction.
And Steve, taking it back to the presidential election, Donald Trump has said that he'd like to impose high tariffs on Chinese and Mexican imports. As an economist, how do you think that would impact the United States economy and taking it back here maybe to Wisconsin, too?
I think it'd be a disaster for two reasons. One, you would see prices in U.S. stores go through the roof. You would see the export market for a lot of our goods drop like a rock. The only thing that is keeping the U.S. auto industry growing strong is exports to China. And we would essentially cut that off. We would be shooting Michigan in the foot if we did something like that. The other thing, and this is a longer term, is that when you start to put up these trade barriers, what happens is the industries that are protected tend to get a little... I'm debating on using this term. They tend to get fat and lazy. And they're not facing competition. So if they're not facing competition, why be efficient? Why innovate? Innovate drives the economy. Innovation drives the economy. So putting up trade barriers essentially is putting dampers on competition, which harms the economy.
We leave it there. Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
That was Steve Deller, professor of agricultural and applied economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He joined us there to talk about the importance of trade policies in this year's presidential election and beyond.